Welcome to another episode of Conversations on Transformation, our series of interviews from the STEG Annual Conference 2024. My name is Tim Phillips, and I'm at NYU Abu Dhabi to talk to the experts who understand the challenges and opportunities of structural transformation and economic growth. Many of the world's poorest countries are rich in natural resources like gold and diamonds. But using these resources as a driver of structural transformation has proved to be extraordinarily difficult. Melanie Gracer of Vienna University has researched how Liberia's growth depends on mining and how different types of mining contract can have very different outcomes for local communities. When I spoke to her, we discussed the different ways in which multinational mining companies and small local businesses may interact with that community. But to put this into context, we started by talking about the huge scale of Liberia's economic challenge.
If we look at the GDP per capita of Liberia, it was $750 USD in 2022, which makes it the 15th least developed country in the world. If we look at the Human Development Index, which also includes education and health indicators, then Liberia ranks at 178 out of 191 countries. So it is one of the least developed countries in the world. Liberia's development has been impacted by many different events. So first of all, there is a long period of civil war from 1989 to 2003, which unfortunately destroyed most of the public infrastructure. So since then, there's been a lot of reconstruction and development. But then unfortunately, in 2014, the Ebola virus disease hit West Africa, and Liberia was severely affected by that, followed by the COVID-19 pandemic, which restricted Liberia's development in terms of the movement of people, going to work, etc. So all of this was then topped by the rise in global inflation. So Liberia imports most of its goods, and so the global rise in prices did affect the economy on top of that. Nonetheless, Liberia did develop a lot since the civil war, and it's moving in the right direction, and mining could be a way to improve the development of Liberia even further.
Set against that really long list of challenges that Liberia has faced and is still facing, it is rich in natural resources, isn't it?
Liberia has large reserves of diamonds, gold, and iron ore. Before the civil war, Liberia was actually one of the world's largest producers of iron ore. It definitely has the potential, but Liberia is a classic example of a country with the resource curse. It has a large amount of resources, but a low level of development.
To explain that resource curse, there are countries that, well, you would think should be doing better, but having natural resources cause problems, societal and economic problems.
Exactly.
As you said, Liberia is developing now. How important is mining in that economic development?
The most recent data from 2020 shows that the extractive sector contributed 54% to GDP and 96% of Liberia's total exports. It's obviously also a very important source of domestic tax revenue.
Your work that we're going to talk about here, I mean, it shows how important it is to distinguish between different types of mining, which is something that hadn't occurred to me. In this work, you've separated the mining activity in Liberia into three categories. First of all, the industrial and semi-industrial categories. What does that mean? What sort of companies, what sort of size of mines are we talking about?
Okay, when we talk about industrial mining, we're talking about large-scale mining performed by multinational companies. Mm-hmm. So this form of mining is the most capital-intensive. For example, when these companies obtain licenses from the Liberian government, usually the license to operate for 25 years. So these are really big investments we're talking about. Mm-hmm. The semi-industrial mines are in between the industrial and the artisanal mines in terms of size, in terms of how mechanized they are. The government allows the use of heavy-duty machinery, but only to a certain extent.
And the word you mentioned, the artisanal mines. What are artisanal mines?
So the artisanal mines are mines that are by law only allowed to be mined by Liberians. The use of machinery is prohibited. So there are some small machineries that Liberians can use. But when I say that machinery is prohibited, I mean like these big heavy-duty machineries not allowed.
You don't see enormous great big diggers and exactly. conveyor belts and things like that.
It's very labor-intensive. So mm-hmm. that means you have many people working in the mine, not using machinery, using shovels.
Wow.
That's basically the local form of mining.
So you mentioned the government sets rules about artisanal mining. Sounds to me like it's legal. But is it profitable at that small scale?
There are legal artisanal mines and there's also illicit artisanal mines. So you have both in Liberia. And in general, if we think about the profitability of both of these legal and illegal artisanal mines, they are profitable compared to other livelihood options for rural Aha. populations. And in many cases, artisanal mining is also an additional form of income generation. Profitability of artisanal mines obviously also depends on the position in the mining field. So the mine owners generally have a lot of profits, while the gold diggers, who are the ones who are actually performing the mining, yeah. usually have lower profits, obviously, than the mine owners. And it also depends on the type of minerals that is being mined. It's a bit more difficult to mine diamonds because mm-hmm. it takes some time until diamonds are found.
There's not that many of them when exactly. you wait until you sort of hit the jackpot on that.
Exactly. Yeah. For gold mining, even if you mine a gram of gold in a matter of a day or two, then you will still mm-hmm. be able to sell that, which actually makes it more profitable than diamond mining. And the third factor which affects the profitability of artisanal mining is the productivity of a field. You can have a mining claim with a lot of resources in the ground and then a mining claim which does not have many. So
of course, yeah.
all these factors determine the profitability of artisanal mining. Getting back to your question of what these miners would be doing if they wouldn't be mining in the field. As you said, yes, they would be doing farming. So mostly subsistence activities, hunting, fishing, farming. And this is because all these mines are in rural areas where there is mostly not that much other activity to do apart from the subsistence activities. I also want to distinguish between these communities where a mine opens up, and then people move into mining, and then these miners that move from mine to mine over West Africa. So that means that if a mine in a particular community wouldn't open up, then the people within the community would continue in subsistence activities. But the miners that mine all over West Africa wouldn't really be affected because then they would just move to another mine.
So you set out to discover the employment effects of these different types of mining and the economic effects on the communities. But to do that, you have to know about which mines are open, whether they are working, and you have to know something about the local economic effects. Where do you get all this data?
So I constructed a new data set which combines information on mine location and opening with data on employment. The mining data I received from the Liberian Ministry of Mines and Energy. They georeference all their mining licenses, meaning they have coordinates where this mining is taking place, and additionally, information on the mining. So what type of mineral is being mined, the license duration, etc. My second source of data is employment data from the Liberian Demographic and Health Survey, which is also georeferenced, meaning that I can then match households to the mine locations. So I know how far households are located from these mining locations. Additionally, for artisanal mines, the opening and closing years are not as accurate as we've just discussed.
I can imagine,
some
yes.
of them are illicit and might actually be opening up before they register and already uh-huh. producing before they register. Yeah. So as a robustness check, I use the variation in the global gold price as the temporal variation in the difference in difference analysis, meaning that once the gold price increases, more mining will take place because it becomes more profitable to mine. If the gold price decreases, then it becomes less profitable to mine and mines will close down. So for these artisanal mines, I use the gold price as an additional temporal variation because I don't always trust the opening and closing years of the artisanal mining license.
And this is how we manage to achieve a causal relationship because of the way that you're looking at this rather than just looking at these general economic and employment effects.
Exactly. So the causal relationship, I determine it using a difference analysis where I compare the employment outcomes of individuals close to mines with individuals further away mm-hmm. before and after mines opened up.
I see from your paper that you're looking at booms and busts in mining. Why are there booms?
If there's a gold price increase, then there will be a lot more artisanal mining. Mm-hmm. We will also find more industrial mining, but because industrial mining is more capital intensive, it takes longer for a gold price increase to actually translate into increased industrial mining. For artisanal mining, this can be relatively fast if the gold price increases, which we've seen from 2007 onwards, there was a lot more artisanal mining. Uh-huh.
So given that, what did you find was the impact of artisanal mining on employment and on the economy?
Okay, I look at the local effects of mining on employment. And by local, mm-hmm. I mean the effects on communities around mining sites, maybe up to 20 kilometers from a mining site. When artisanal mines open up, there's an increase in economic activity, and some rural communities are completely transformed economically. When looking at the employment opportunities, you have individuals moving from agriculture to work in the services and sales sector, opening small businesses such as restaurants, hairdressers, or opening up small shops, selling all sorts of things to miners. People will start working in the manual sector within the mine itself, obviously as miners, or other sorts of jobs that cater to the mining. So that's this local structural shift. When artisanal mines open up, new job opportunities outside of agriculture open up for the local communities.
That's interesting because it's not just the mines that we're seeing here giving people money to spend. It's the effect of that money being spent within the community that's creating opportunities. Looking at it at the other end for the industrial mining operations, do we see the same effects?
The impact of industrial mines is very context specific. Research shows that industrial mines can have a positive effect on local communities. But I do not find this effect in Liberia. These industrial mines do not have a positive effect on local communities, at least measured in terms of the employment opportunities. I would say that the main reasons for this is that these industrial mines in Liberia act more as enclaves. They import lots of goods and services from abroad, and all their workers come from abroad. They don't really interact with the local community. So the reasons why industrial mining seems to have little effect on local communities is because there's little backward and consumption linkages from industrial mines to local communities in Liberia. When we talk about backward linkages, we're talking about mines requiring inputs from goods and services produced locally, enabling existing local firms to expand and new ones to open up. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about consumption linkages, I'm talking about the fact that the employment of workers within a mine and the higher income generated through that leads to an increase in local purchasing power so that enterprises in the non-mining sector can also flourish. This is this indirect effect you were talking about before.
But Melanie, why are these backward linkages not working?
First of all, local firms only supply less technical, non-core goods and services mm-hmm. to these mining companies, meaning there are some backward linkages, but not the ones where you would expect the most income to be generated. For example, engineering services, supply of equipment for the mining company. And so if these linkages to the local economy are limited to these less technical non-core supplies of goods and services, such as cleaning, catering, and security services, there will be some benefits to the locals, but not as much as would be possible. And in addition, often these non-core services are not supplied by people from the surrounding villages, but actually from bigger cities such as the capital of a county or the mm-hmm. capital city itself. The mineral development agreements that the companies set up with the government do require companies to source locally, if the delivered goods and services have the same quality and price as they would be able to get somewhere else. And this is where often the local communities are not able to keep up.
I get it. That's a really big if, isn't it?
Yeah. And these large companies have certain business practices which are unsustainable for small firms. For example, when talking to businesses next to these industrial mines, I often heard about the issue that they supply the company. For example, a wood constructor supplies the company with new furniture, but then the company doesn't pay for 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then a small firm doesn't have the liquidity to continue business. So some of these business practices of these large companies are just not sustainable for small Liberian firms in rural areas.
If I understand correctly, when these large companies sign an agreement with the government over many years, this closes down the artisanal mines in the immediate area. So might that be like a sort of a double hit on the economy, because there's no longer the opportunity for those artisanal mines to function?
Exactly. So I find that this issue is the case for gold mines,
mm-hmm.
because for gold mines, you have had a lot of artisanal gold mining going on for many decades. And then a large mining company comes in and will then not allow these artisanal miners to continue the mining, because these companies do not have strong linkages to the local community, actually results in a negative effect of these large mining companies coming in and replacing all of the economic activity that was ongoing during artisanal mining. I do not find this effect for iron ore mines, so industrial iron ore mines, because iron ore is not mined artisanally.
Mm.
So you don't find a negative effect of industrial iron ore mines coming in.
Talking about negative effects, we discussed booms. There's busts as well in mining. What's the effect of a bust on the mines and on the impacts they have?
When looking at a bust in an artisanal mining community, you see that once mining stops, the local economy will also come to a stop, because all of the local economic activity is generated from these linkages to the mine. So when mines close, all the miners leave, and we're talking about sometimes thousands of miners coming into a community and then leaving again.
Mm-hmm.
So once there's a bust, you actually see that overall employment decreases as compared to before the mines opened, which is mostly because people are reluctant to go back to working in agriculture after they have had the possibility to actually earn some income and have a better form of living than being farmers.
So I noticed also, as part of your research, you did some interviews. You already had the data. So what do the interviews tell you that you didn't already know?
I realized that I need to actually talk to communities affected by mining,
mm.
because the data tells you the general causal effects, but it doesn't explain the mechanisms behind these effects. So I wanted to find out, why am I seeing these results? How can I explain these results? I went to quite a few mining communities in Liberia, both artisanal, semi-industrial, and industrial mining communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I interviewed business owners, farmers, the traditional council, so town chiefs, for example, and asked them about the effect of the mines on local economic activity and employment opportunities.
What sort of things were they able to tell you that helped you?
I, for example, found out why these large industrial gold mines have this negative effect on, mm-hmm. on the local communities. And it became apparent right away. Every single person I talked to in these villages said, before these big mining companies came, they were able to earn an income. They were able to sell, even if it was just their agricultural produce, they were able to sell that very quickly. They were able to work in the mine to get additional income if needed. They really noticed the reduction in income once the industrial mines opened up. And they also explained that it is very difficult for them to generate any benefits from the industrial mine because of the issues we talked about before.
Across sub-Saharan Africa, these large mining contracts have been controversial, not just in Liberia, many other countries as well. But of course, you can understand why government's attention is taken by the prospect of doing a deal with these huge multinational mining companies. Does your research imply that perhaps governments should also be looking at incentivizing more artisanal mining instead?
I think that governments should focus on both types of mining. On one hand, they should develop artisanal mining and make sure that the positive effects of this type of mining become sustainable beyond the resource boom. And on the other hand, I think that governments should continue to give out licenses to industrial mines, but ensure that these mines actually have positive impacts on the local communities and become these growth poles, which the economic literature often talks about.
Other potential policies, I mean, feasible potential policies that governments could use to make mining, either artisanal or industrial, a better driver of employment and economic growth?
For industrial mining, there are a few things that can be done. I think that the existing policies and agreements that are actually in place should be implemented by companies in a timely manner. So, for example, the minerals and mining law, the mineral policy, and all these mineral development agreements all contain requirements for linkages to the local economy, such as the hiring of local labor and the contracting of local firms. However, all of this is not implemented or not implemented in a timely manner. And I think it's the government's responsibilities to ensure that what is already there in these policies is actually being implemented. So what needs to be done, or what could be done, is that the compliance monitoring capacity of the Liberian government should be improved, where both the human and the logistical capacity are strengthened to actually conduct these compliance monitoring activities. In addition, there's the issue of rent seeking by some politicians. And I think that is a very sensitive issue, but something that also needs to be tackled in order for the government to be more effective in monitoring these companies to actually implement what is there in the agreements. Iberia is working on a local content policy, which should further require companies to source inputs locally. An important aspect there is to actually provide business training to local communities to help them meet the demands of these large companies. And it would be important to actually require these companies to train locals in producing the inputs that the company needs.
Yes.
Be it just maybe supplying catering, we're talking about maybe catering for 100 to 200 people, or supplying the uniforms. And this sort of training needs to take place before the mining actually starts.
And for artisanal mines?
What's very important is to formalize the sector. So bringing the illicit mines into the formal sector by organizing, registering, and reforming ASM, this should increase economic growth and also reduce the social and environmental violations in the sector. And this formalization process needs to be a bottom-up approach, working on formalization together with the miners, not only focusing on registering and licensing the mines, but ensuring that miners actually receive training on mining in a safer and more environmentally friendly way. Another important aspect regarding artisanal mines is the sustainability aspect. As my research shows, during active artisanal mining, there's a positive effect on the economy. Once the mines become inactive, there's actually a negative effect. So how can we ensure that this positive effect lasts beyond the resource boom? And one important point there would be to make it easier for Liberians to scale up the mining operations. So as I said before, the semi-industrial mining in between the artisanal and the industrial mining would be a good way for Liberians to make more income from mining, because you can only do the shovel mining to a certain extent. If you reach hard rock, you need heavy machinery to continue.
Yeah.
And that is the case in many artisanal mining communities. Mining stops because from that point onwards, you would need bigger machines to actually get to the gold ore. So if you make it easier for Liberians to scale up the operations and obtain a semi-industrial mining license, then more resources would be retained in the community, because mining could go on past this initial stage. And this would also mean there would be more development in the future. Currently, it's quite difficult for locals from communities to obtain semi-industrial mining licenses because these mining licenses are very expensive. We're talking about $10,000 for a license and many other bureaucratic hurdles to obtain this license. So if it would be made easier for locals to actually use machines to continue mining, I think that would already be quite helpful to increase the sustainability. And in addition, what would be helpful is to have some form of financial and business training. So if you have a rural community which had a livelihood based on subsistence activities, not much income earning, suddenly mining comes in and you have locals earning a lot more than they used to, you need to somehow train people to invest these additional resources productively, invest in a cocoa plantation or a farm where in the future you can continue to earn income once the resources have been depleted.
That's a fascinating insight into both the potential of this sector for structural transformation and development, but also the unintended consequences of well-intentioned policy. Melanie, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper is called Industrial versus Artisanal Mining: The Effects on Local Employment in Liberia.
You have been listening to Conversations on Transformation, recorded live at the STEG Annual Conference Week 2024 at NYU Abu Dhabi. STEG stands for Structural Transformation and Economic Growth, and you can find out more about it at steg.cepr.org.